You're tuned to 1520 WCAT Radio, and it's time now for the Avid Reader Show with your host, Sam Hankin. Sam will offer reviews and interviews of some of the more interesting books and authors of today, and now Sam Hankin.
Hi, this is Sam Hankin, as you know, welcoming you to another edition of the Avid Reader. As some of you may know, if you've listened to this show in the past, we try to keep you informed of current bestsellers as well as classic works. I haven't really told you too much about the store. Let me tell you a little bit about it. We are what you might call a full-service independent bookstore, pretty much the last of a breed. We have all the popular and independent bestsellers, as well as some weird and unusual works that I and my staff have enjoyed. We also have a cafe with excellent coffees and specialty drinks, as well as great pastries. As far as the bookstore is concerned, we've won awards for the Critics' Choice as the best independent bookstore on the main line, and we've been featured in Chester County Life and the Daily Local, as well as the ABA, the American Booksellers Association, which is probably the award I cherish the most. We host lots and lots of book clubs, as well as our own. In fact, ours has grown so much now, we have over 25 members. We've had to split it into 2 days. I'm the first to say, we have an open mic night on the second Friday of each month. And at the open mic night, you can come and sing, read your poetry. You can play the guitar. We have some great guitarists. We've even had some of the singers from open mic on the show here. I'm the first to say we're pretty hard to find. We're in the Eagle community in Exton, Pennsylvania, just off of Route 100, and right across, directly across from the Downingtown exit of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. So you go into the main entrance of Eagle View, follow the blue and purple signs to the town center. We're just above the Brookside Restaurant, which some of you may know, and 2 doors down from Nudie's. You can't miss it if you look carefully. The thing that I'm most proud of, I guess, about this show is that we've been able to get some of the top authors in the country or in the world to come on the show. And we've also brought in local authors who have published works of interest and quality. Jen Bryant, for example, is one. She lives in Glenmore, actually close to my house. She talked to us about her newest work, which is The Fortune of Carmen Navarro. She writes for children and teens, and has won the Caldecott Award, which is one of the highest honors that can be bestowed upon someone who writes children's works. We also had as a guest early on Tatiana Derone, the author of Sarah's Key, which many of you may have read, and her newest work, A Secret Kept. She spoke to us from Paris. Sometimes we have musical guests, as I said, like Jessica Whitlatch, who was one of our singer-songwriters who performs an open mic. Paul Harding, another guest I'm very proud of, the author of Tinkers, which was the 2010 Pulitzer Prize winner. He talked to us at length, was a great guest, very open. In fact, at the end of the show, he asked if he could come back and speak again. We've also hosted Thridi Umrigar, who's the author of The Space Between Us and The Weight of Heaven, a current bestseller. Helen Simonson, who wrote Major Pettigrew's Last Stand, which is our book selection for this month for the book club. She was excellent. We'll meet on January 19th and on the 20th from 7 to 9 p.m. when she'll appear via Skype so that the readers can see her and ask her questions. Coming up in the next weeks, we have David Byrne from The Talking Heads. He'll be reading a chapter from his new book, The Bicycle Diaries. And also Chris Cleaves, author of Little B, another one many of you may have read, and also a New York Times bestseller. Another guest we expect to have is Charles Yu, who's the author of a really great book called How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, a funny and really great book, especially since I'm a science fiction buff. Also, amazingly, we're going to get the translator of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy, and he... Of course, since we couldn't get the author because he's dead, he's the next best thing, and he should appear with us in the next few weeks. Also, the gentleman who wrote Cutting from Stone, a very popular bestseller, his name is Abraham Borghese. And another great book, A Visit from the Goon Squad, the author will be Jennifer Egan, and she'll be here as well. if you want to mention the fact when you come into the store that you've listened to the radio show, we've decided we'll give you 25% off of any New York Times bestseller. That'll give me an idea of who's listening in from week to week. So today is a special day. We have with us Susan Widener, author of Again in a Heartbeat, a memoir of love, loss, and dating again. It's a sad book in many ways, but a very uplifting book in many other ways. So after the break, we'll be back with Susan, and we can discuss her book with her.
Hey everybody, I'm Matt Lombardo, host of the Matt Lombardo Show here on 1520 WCHE, and now the host of the brand new WCHE Wake Up Call every Monday through Friday morning from 7 to 10 as we tackle hot button issues from the political, sports, and entertainment world. We'll have guests from political pundits, current and former professional athletes, and entertainment newsmakers, leaving no stone unturned to keep you up to date as you start your workday. So answer the WCHE Wake Up Call every Monday through Friday from 7 to 10, and we'll talk to you then.
Hi, I'm Charlie Silvestri.
And I'm Jason Mundock. Starting in mid-November, WCHE will present a new one-hour music showcase.
In the first half, Up Close and Acoustic with Charlie Silvestri will feature music performance and interview radio.
In the second half, Around the Wood Stove with Jason Mundock will feature conversations with artists about their music and the inspiration behind it.
We'll be including local, regional, and national touring acts.
Look for us on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on 1520 AM WCHE and WCHE1520.com.
Brought to you by Taylor's Music of Westchester.
Hi, this is Ron McNeil, and I host one of the most popular radio shows in Chester County between the hours of 10 a.m. and noon, Monday through Friday. It's called Ron's Swap Shop, and it's designed for you, the listening audience, who might have something around the house to sell, buy, trade, or just give away. The great part of the show is that it's all free. It doesn't cost you anything to list your things on the radio show or on the website. Just call in WCHE at 610-701-9243 and describe your item to me. I'll then post them free of charge on our website, WCHE1520.com, where they'll stay up there for a full 2 weeks. Remember the times, 10 a.m. till noon, Monday through Friday. Call 610-701-9243.
For a lighthearted look at issues affecting seniors, the baby boom generation and their families, including finances, care, the law, and decisions the over 50 generation face every day, tune in to WCHE's 50 Plus Planning Ahead. The show is co-hosted by elder law attorney Janet Colleton and Phil McFadden, co-owner of Homestead Senior Services. 50 Plus Planning Ahead airs Wednesday afternoons at 4:30 p.m. Janet and Phil will be joined by guests who will discuss what we do when we get older and how to assist our parents with their needs. So tune in Wednesdays at 4:30 p.m. for 50 Plus Planning Ahead on your home for local news, talk, sports, and entertainment. WCHE 1520 AM.
Hi, this is Sam Hankin again, host of The Avid Reader, and we're lucky today to have in the studio Susan Widener, who's written Again in a Heartbeat, a memoir of love, loss, and dating again. Hi, Susan. Thanks for coming.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the book, since you're familiar with Wellington Square Bookshop, you run a woman's writing circle at our store. What's the goal of your group there?
Our group is basically a support group for women writers. We meet the second Saturday of the month at your bookshop, and what we do is we sit in a circle and we share our work through a read-around format, and it's very non-judgmental and supportive. It's almost like a community of writers coming together and helping each other with our routine of writing, as well as supporting each other in our goals with writing and giving feedback.
Do you find that there's criticism? Do you find that people are embarrassed sometimes by their own writing, and then that changes during the process?
Yeah, there's some nervousness when the women first come in. But there's a magic that's created in the circle, in that it's a very sharing and supportive venue for the women. And once they start reading, it's amazing how their work resonates with the other women. And that's the beauty of the circle.
Do you find that it's kind of a therapeutic experience for some of the writers?
Absolutely. I mean, we started out, we opened it to fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, but somehow it's evolved a lot into memoir writing. Although, as you know, all writing is basically based in memoir. But we have had some great reads that the women have said later, this is really, you know, I feel very transformed that I was able to write this piece about my father or about my daughter. We've had some really heartbreaking things read in the circle. We keep it confidential. We try not to talk about it afterwards with other people, but it's open to anyone. It's free, and, you know, you don't have to be a writer with a capital W. You just come to the circle, and you come with good intentions, and you are greeted with open arms in the circle. And we have professional writers, and we have non-professional writers. We have just a group of women writers together.
I guess it's true that almost all work is somewhat autobiographical. Your book actually is pretty much totally autobiographical. But, well, first, how did you find our bookshop, and why do you come there? And tell them a little bit about, tell our readers a little bit about why it's there, and what time you meet, and what days you meet.
Okay. Well, I'm a resident of Chester County, and I'm very familiar with Eagle View Corporate Center. And I guess I stumbled on the bookstore one day. Maybe I saw an article about it. I'm not even clear, but I walked in and I was instantly transported. Like I always say, it's like, to me, it's something like out of Harry Potter, Diagon Alley. You walk in, it's this amazing feeling you get, almost like you're in London when you walk in. And
yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Oh, okay. You accomplished it. And it's just the perfect venue for the circle. And you know, you offer us free coffee and tea. We sit in a secluded area. We're surrounded by books and artwork. And we meet the second Saturday of the month from 9 to about 11:30.
And how many women are in the group right now?
The group is basically in flux. We have new writers come, some that don't come for a couple months. So totally, we've probably had maybe 35 to 45 women come to the circle. We have a regular group. We usually don't have more than 8, though, that come to the circle on a monthly basis, which is good because anything over 8 starts to get unwieldy in the circle because each writer is given 10 to 15 minutes to read a piece of her work and then ask for feedback if they so desire.
Do you find that the feedback is generally supportive, or do you find that there are people that are really willing to be candid and tell the author what's wrong with their work?
We've had a wonderful, supportive group of women. I have to say that criticism is allowed, but it's not really, it's not a vicious place at all. It's a wonderful place. It's very supportive, and the writing is incredible from a lot of the women. So,
how much of your book arose from the writing group, if any?
Yeah, I had a mentor named Mary Pierce Brosmer, and I started out with a group called Women Writing for a Change. I went to a writing retreat in Kentucky shortly after I stopped working as a journalist, and that's where I got the concept of the read-around, and that's when I started feeling the power of the circle and the magic of writing in a group of women that's very supportive.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your book and how it came about. It's called Again in a Heartbeat, and it talks about your relationship with your husband and his illness and how he died. And why did you decide you wanted to write about such a difficult, you know, period of your life?
Well, I should say that originally I was going to write, after I left journalism, I wanted to go into a more creative form of writing. And originally I started writing about a lot of the people I met through internet dating sites after I was widowed, or people I met, you know, just met and dated. And then I started one or two chapters about my husband and his ordeal with cancer. And I was in a couple groups of writers, and they looked at it and they said, we love this stuff about John and his ordeal with cancer. You should make that more of the book. And that's when I started to turn it more into a story about what happens when you meet someone, you fall in love, they're diagnosed with cancer. It took 7 years for him to die from the disease, and the toll it took on our young marriage. We had two young sons, and that's that evolved into part one of my book, and then part two of my memoir is what happens when you're on your own as a single woman, and what do you do with two young children? How do you really replace that in your life?
Well, have you been able to replace it?
Have not been able to replace it, but have had a lot of good people that I've met. But now I think I'm becoming a believer that true love only comes once in a lifetime.
Do you really think that's true?
So far, that's true for me, yeah.
Well, do you think in the book, which is an excellent book and really gives you a picture of what your husband was like, do you think that you couldn't help but romanticize some aspects of your relationship in the work? Realizing it's a memoir, the question is, did you vary it all from the events as they occurred, as best you can think of?
Yeah, a lot of it I think I did try to keep it as a romance, a true love story. As I always like to say, memoir is your legacy, and I knew my sons would be reading this and other people who knew him, and I was not intent on, you know, showing all the warts. I think I did show a lot of the warts in our relationship, including how upset I was with him for being sick.
Well, one of the things that you did I thought was very honest and courageous was that you actually talked about how you would yell at your husband for being sick, and then you'd feel remorse afterwards. But I think it takes a lot of courage to reveal that in the book about yourself.
Thank you. That sort of hits onto the healing power of memoir, which is why I wrote the book, to come to terms with what I felt was the fact that I wasn't a very good wife to him at the end. And by writing our story, I have been able to come to terms with that for myself. And that's the and move on. You move on after you write the story. Because once you put it down on paper, a lot of the power is taken away from the story, and you come to terms with it.
We have Joanna, who's on the phone, that wanted to ask you a question about what we've just been talking about. So, Joanna, go ahead.
Hi, I have a comment about Susan's book. I went in the bookstore and asked them to recommend a memoir, and they recommended Susan's book, and I finished reading it, and it's a very, very compelling memoir, and I'm writing my own memoir to try and heal. I'm not ready to get published or anything, but, you know, the healing power of memoir is just wonderful. I mean, I know in my situation why I'm writing a memoir, but Susan, can you tell me what inspired you to write your book?
I think what inspired me to write it was just the whole idea of coming to terms with what happens when Prince Charming enters your life and then makes an untimely exit. And I wanted to do that and write about it and come to terms with it.
Well, I can understand that from reading your memoir about the struggle and the pain. And the other thing is, I mean, I've been working on my memoir for a couple of years, and you do edit. Is that correct, that if I needed an editor, I could look you up for your services? Because I don't write nearly as well as you do.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I do edit memoir. And one other thing in answer to your other question about what inspired me, I was hoping that it would help other people write about their lives and, you know, help them with their situations as well.
Thanks, Johanna. That gives us, I think that gave us a lot of insight.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have another call now from Cindy, who had a question for Susan.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question for Susan. Writing memoir is tricky, and I was wondering if there was one particular aspect of the writing that you really grappled with as far as actually telling the story. I actually have another part to my question, too. I'm wondering if when you were writing it, like anything sort of surprised you about... if you made any sort of interesting discoveries along the way that sort of you weren't expecting to make. And I'll go ahead and take that off the air.
Thank you.
Right.
Well, I think one of the more interesting discoveries I made was I got more in touch with who I was and came to terms with my own anger at myself for not having been a great wife, that I felt I wasn't a good wife in the end. And that was pretty surprising, the way the words allowed me to almost do a self-healing thing. It was very therapeutic writing my story. And it was also... you know, a lot of fun, too, to sit there and work on it and come to look at dialogue and characterization, all that good stuff you do with writing, and I enjoyed that a lot as I saw it begin to unfold and turn into a real story.
Thanks, Cindy, for your question. Also, we have another caller, but if you do want to call in, our number is 610-701-WCHE, so that's 610-701-9243. 610-701-9243, and we have another caller now, Kate, who had a question for Susan. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi, Susan. I guess my question is a little bit more on the personal side of things. Because what you were writing about was so personal and because you were sharing about how you felt you could have been a better wife to your husband, was there a lot of anxiety at the time of the publish of the book, just sort of almost like a public confession of what you could have done better? How did you feel as the book was coming out and you were receiving feedback from readers about something so intimate to you?
Oh, good question. Thanks. Well, you have to turn off your inner critic when you're doing your writing. And, you know, I felt like the way it was, as soon as people started reading my book and they started sharing aspects of their lives with me and how my story resonated with them and we got to talking, I just realized this is the incredible power of memoir and joining together with people in a community. They read your story and then they're sharing their lives with you as well. And it's really phenomenal when that happens.
Thanks, Kate. That brings up a question I had. Kate was talking about when the book came out, and this is a book that was self-published, and lots of people have different ideas about self-publishing work. Tell us a little bit of why you decided to do it this way rather than seeking a publisher like Simon & Schuster or Random House.
Well, one of the things I decided was I needed an encore career, as they call it, after I left journalism. I wanted to be able to have a book and talk to other women about writing. And it was never about the money, but it was just about me pursuing my passion. And I knew if I tried to shop this around, it could be 2 or 3 or 4 years, and I was already getting people saying, oh, well, this is just like Love Story or something like that. And I knew in today's competitive market, it was going to be very difficult to sell this story, and I wasn't willing to wait. And self-publishing, I mean, I've had some, you know, professional help with editing it and cover design, and it's just a beautiful product, and you have it.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the cover right now, which is a painting of Forsythius, and there's a scene in the book, without trying to give things away, in which I guess after or before John's death, you went out and just kind of ripped the Forsythias out of the ground because they were his plants, and you just kind of ripped them out by the roots because you were so angry.
Right, right. Yeah, the Forsythia is kind of a symbol of rebirth, that every spring they would bloom so bright and yellow and radiant, but he wasn't there. And how could that possibly be? How could life go on without him? So basically what happened was I thought about the rebirth symbol and the Forsythia and decided that had to be the cover.
It's also true that Forsythia only lasts for a while anyway.
Yeah.
They're beautiful for a couple of weeks, and then they just go away.
Absolutely. Very fleeting.
Well, so how, you know, this was a very difficult time, especially since his illness took a long time before he actually died. What about your children during this time and now, and what do they think about the book?
My sons have chosen right now not to read it. Maybe they will eventually. They are both grown men now, and when they will read, and they will read it, I'm sure, but right now they're not reading it. And I didn't write it for them. I wrote it for myself and for John, and hopefully they will read it someday.
Were they both old enough to know their father before he died?
Yeah. Alex was 11 and Daniel was 7. So, but they were both very young, obviously. And John was a writer, too. He had written a memoir. It never got published, and he's written a fabulous memoir. about his days as a cadet at the United States Military Academy.
Although you only touch on it a little bit, it sounds from what I've read in the book that both kids had a really nice relationship with him.
Yeah, we were always very close, and he was a great dad.
Well, you were talking about writing for yourself or writing for a reader, and there's a lot of people who feel like once the book leaves an author's hands, it's pretty much the reader's book. It's the reader's responsibility. The author no longer is involved. But you're indicating that you kind of wrote it for yourself. But is it true, too, that once it leaves your hand, you feel like it's the reader's responsibility to take what meaning from it that he or she can?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as I said, the feedback I've been receiving has been wonderful, and it's resonated with others, and it's encouraged them to tell me about their lives, whether it's been a death of a spouse or a child, and they have been writing too, whether it's journaling or just sitting there and thinking about writing their memoir as a way to heal.
I think you actually read a chapter of it at the open mic night, correct?
Yeah, I did. That was great. Yeah.
Did you get any feedback from that? Because it was really poignant when you read it.
I usually do get feedback. I don't remember that night exactly, but people do. They go, oh, how did you write that? It's very hard to write it. But again, it's such a relief when you do put it down on paper.
Well, as I was saying earlier, was there a way that you did, like, I don't know, a reality check throughout the book and say, oh, no, we weren't this romantic, he didn't look this handsome, the first time we dated it wasn't this great? Did you find yourself, because I know I would do that. I would tend to, like, people remember the good times in marriages that end.
No, I'm really a believer in true love. I mean, the cancer destroyed what we had, but we had a great relationship, and it was always wonderful, and that's why I wrote about it. It took me 13 years to write about it. He had been gone 13 years before I was able to write about it.
And you said in the book, I think, that towards the end he told you that he wanted you to continue and maybe go dating and things like that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and now I have a blog, and I blog a lot of these things, and I get a lot of feedback from people about their stories, including internet dating and some of the frogs and princes and people they've met in their lives since their spouses have died, but just moving on. And that's what memoir does. It helps you move on.
There's also a kind of, it doesn't sound right, but there's also a kind of comic element of the book, which is the history of your internet dating. And I think it's also honest to talk about that and then say, I gave it up. And basically, I think you gave it up because you never could meet anyone that would come up to John's standards, correct?
Well, I gave it up. Yeah, I mean, it just got tiresome after a while. And you know, there was a feeling of powerlessness, too, on those dates of, you know, just meeting people. It was sort of like a job interview, and after a while, I really didn't enjoy it.
It's funny, too, because at the beginning of the book, you say how you've changed some of the names, and based on your descriptions of some of the dates, I think that was a good idea.
All right.
Well,
thank you.
To close out, we have just a couple of minutes left. To close it out, why don't you once again tell us what your recommendations, even to someone like me? I've been writing all my life, but I've never been able to really come up with a story. I know what my life's about, but I don't know the story of my life. I can write everything that's ever happened to me, but I can't write what it means.
Right.
So what advice do you give to people like me?
Well, that's what we talk about in the circle, and that's what I'll be talking about at a memoir class I'm going to be teaching starting January 10th at Lionville Middle School through the Downingtown Area Recreation Consortium, is how to find that compelling narrative of your life. And you do that by first just dumping on the page, and eventually you find out the meaningful event of your life, and from there grows the story. People usually have one major meaningful event in their life that is compelling, and that is the memoir. And that's how it differs from autobiography, for example.
Okay. I think that pretty well covers it, at least as far as I'm concerned. Do you have anything else you wanted to add in the short time we have left?
No, I think you covered it all. Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed talking about this.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. At first, I was a little worried because it's a tragedy of a sort, but it's also kind of a story of triumph. And I think that you've conveyed that very well, and I think your readers understand that. It's almost like, as you said, a public service to get this book out there. And it's not a question of making money or not making money. It's more of a question of helping other people to understand their own tragedies or their own life experiences.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Thank
well,
you.
Thanks a lot, Susan, and I hope all of you will join us next week for another edition of The Avid Reader. Not quite sure what I'll be doing, but I'll be doing something interesting. So we'll see you then.
You've been listening to The Avid Reader Show with your host, Sam Hankin. Sam will be back next week with reviews and interviews of some of the more interesting books and authors of today.